Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the docket today, well, the judge is finally going to rule in the Barry Morphew matter. Next, Alex Murdoch appears in court, and this time as a defendant. And if you can't believe it, he may have even more trouble coming his way. A Gabby Petito update and some disturbing information regarding the Aurora Police Department that was involved in the Elijah McClain matter. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and a recap of all our contestants throughout the week so that you can announce the winner for the dumb criminal contestant of the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. Please hit that like button. And if you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button as well. All right, before we get to the docket, ladies and gentlemen, one thing you can be certain about is uncertainty. You never know if there is going to be something that comes your way. Could it be some sort of man-made or nature's natural disaster? You never know, but you need to be prepared for the unexpected. What's the best way to do that? Go to crimetalkprep.com and you can sign up and get a 4-week food supply and get $50 off and free shipping. The bottom line is, if there's something that's going to take place in the world, you are going to have enough food and water and other essentials to get you through those tough times. There are still people that don't have electricity that dealt with Hurricane Ida some 3 weeks ago. It can happen. You have to be able to be prepared and take care of yourself, because sometimes the cavalry may be coming, but it's going to be weeks until they can provide any help. Go to crimetalkprep.com. Get your 4 weeks of food supply, $50 off, and free shipping. You'll be happy you did. All right, let's get to the docket. The judge in the Barry Morphew matter, Judge Patrick Murphy, is giving his ruling as to whether there's enough evidence to hold Barry Morphew for killing his wife and set the matter over for an arraignment, an ultimate trial, or maybe some sort of disposition. And for those who don't know, obviously Barry Morphew faces 5 felony charges, including the charge of first-degree murder for the death of his wife, Suzanne. He's currently being held without bond in the Chaffee County Jail. And Suzanne Morphew, 49, was reported missing over Mother's Day weekend in 2020. Now, before Judge Patrick Murphy will make the ruling, he's allowing both the defense and the prosecution to make a closing argument. Now, the judge is also going to make a decision on whether or not that the 130-page arrest affidavit is going to be unsealed. I can tell you, thus far, as we are filming this video right now, we believe the judge has stated that the court has found probable cause and that he believes that there is sufficient evidence for the case to go forward as it relates to the first-degree murder charge and the tampering with a corpse. There's also some indication that a bond will be given to Barry Morphew, which means the judge is not going to find a proof evident presumption great. We don't know what the bond is as of right now, but if it comes to us while we're filming this, we will let you know. Now, as you may recall, I predicted the court would find probable cause because the preliminary hearing is a very low standard for the case to go forward on. And I also believe that the judge would not find proof evident presumption great, and that the judge would probably set the bond so high that Barry Morphew may not be able to make it. And of course, then after the preliminary hearing, you spend a lot of time and money trying to get out, and now the defendant is probably going to be wondering, wow, why did I spend all that money? I could have waived the preliminary hearing and got to this far. But I still think it was money well spent for Mr. Morphew. We will see how this case plays out. Good lawyers on both sides. Looks like there's a new attorney that's entered for the prosecution and another attorney that has entered for the defense. We'll talk about that more in upcoming shows, but good lawyers on both sides. We'll talk about it more. And as we are filming this video right now, the court has found that Barry Morphew, the government has failed to prove proof evident presumption great, and a bond will be given. Boom! I called it. We'll see if it's so high, though, that Barry can't make it. I still think it's going to be significant. And remember, the court, when setting the bond, has to set it so that it assures the defendant's appearance in court as well as protects the community. I think the bond is probably going to be set somewhere in the amount of $500,000 to $1 million. We'll have to wait and see. All right, next on the docket, Alex Murdaugh. Well, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, SLED, announced Wednesday it is investigating the death of Murdaugh's housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield, and the handling of her estate. The 57-year-old had been the Murdaugh's housekeeper and nanny for around 25 years when she suffered a fatal brain injury following a mystery fall inside the family home. She died several weeks later on February 26th of 2018. Well, Alex Murdaugh has been accused of, get this, pocketing $4 million of insurance payout owed to the grieving sons of his longtime housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield. Now, according to Eric Bland, the attorney working for the Satterfield's family, Murdaugh convinced Satterfield's son, Michael Satterfield, and Brian Harriet to file a wrongful death lawsuit against him and introduce them to a lawyer, his best friend and college roommate, who's going to handle the case. Murdaugh settled the wrongful death claim with the housekeeper's family for $500,000 in 2018. Well, Bland said on Friday that the figure paid out by the insurance policy was actually closer to $4 million. Satterfield's family sued Murdaugh on Wednesday, claiming he has not been paid out one single dime of that settlement. Now, the new lawsuit against Murdaugh claims that the following Satterfield's death, he claimed he was going to take care of the boys because she was going to sue himself for the death. Now, the new lawsuit claims that Tony and Brian did not participate in the settlement negotiations. Neither Tony nor Brian signed any settlement agreement. Neither Tony nor Brian were told of any money was recovered on their behalf. Now, South Carolina's ex-attorney, Alex Murdaugh, appeared in court Thursday afternoon on charges that he paid a former client to kill him, so his son could collect a $10 million insurance policy. Now, Murdaugh turned himself in late Thursday morning after the state law enforcement division announced that they had charged him with insurance fraud, conspiracy to commit insurance fraud, and filing a false police report related to the shooting that allegedly took place on September 4th. Now, the shooter, a guy by the name of Mr. Smith, who was once represented by Mr. Murdaugh's former law firm, in a personal injury lawsuit, was arraigned Thursday morning on the charges of assisted suicide, assault and battery of a high aggravated nature, pointing and presenting a firearm, insurance fraud, and conspiracy to commit insurance fraud. He was released after posting a $55,000 bond, although he reportedly requested a public defender. Now, Mr. Alex Murdaugh, wearing a Hampton County Detention Center inmate uniform, do you think he ever thought that was going to happen? Well, I don't think he did, which is probably one of the reasons why he was crying. That's right, crying like a little baby as his attorney argued for his client's release, saying the only person he's a danger to is himself. Well, I would beg to differ. I think the evidence is coming out that he is a very dangerous person and he is a danger to lots of people. His attorney went on and said his only violence has ever been involved in this, which was to himself. You can see by the mugshot provided by the Hampton County Jail where Murdaugh is housed, apparently doesn't show any healing head wounds, you know, the superficial head wounds, kind of contradicts the claims by Murdaugh's attorneys, does it not? Well, the judge ordered that Murdaugh has to surrender his passport and sign a waiver of extradition, and all that means is that if he fled the state, he would voluntarily come back to the state of South Carolina when he's arrested and he couldn't fight extradition. And he had him sign a $20,000 personal recognizance bond so that if he fails to show up, in theory, the state would be required to collect $20,000 from him, which they wouldn't. So really, he got out on a no bond hold. His co-defendant got out on a $55,000 bond that he had to post. A little more privilege coming through there, perhaps. Apparently, Alex Murdoch will be at a rehabilitation center out of the state, obtaining treatment for an opioid addiction. Murdoch's next court date is set for October 25th. It'll be interesting to see if he is allowed to return to court from the treatment center. Because my experience is most treatment centers will not let you leave the facility to go even to court. You just have to explain the situation to the court. But we'll see how that works out for old Alex Murdoch. Yeah, this guy, he is having his world come tumbling down. And the mere fact that he now has allegations of insurance fraud over money and there's multiple dead bodies has certainly got to be leading the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division to check into anyone that had any relationship with Alex Murdoch in any way that may be responsible or connected with the death of his wife and his son, Paul Murdoch. We'll wait and see. I told you this one was going to be good. Next on the docket, Gabby Petito. An update. The FBI has now reportedly taken over the search for Gabby Petito and are now focusing their efforts in Wyoming. That's Petito's last known location. The FBI apparently has taken over the search because the search is now on federal land and because of the massive national interest in Gabby's disappearance. Now, the missing 22-year-old Gabby Petito's fiancé, Brian Landry, still has not spoken to anyone concerning anything pertaining to Petito's disappearance. Brian Landry's sister, Cassie Landry, went on Good Morning America for an interview and said that Petito was like a sister to her. Cassie further went on to say that she has known Gabby for 2 years and that she was a nice, fun young woman. Cassie said that Gabby was loved by her children and that obviously me and my family want Gabby to be found safe. She said she hopes Petito will be found safe and that this is just a big misunderstanding. Now, as for the body cam footage, Cassie said she watched it and didn't find anything peculiar about it and that this was probably just a regular couple spat gone wrong. Now, Cassie and the rest of her family got postcards from Brian and Gabby during their trip and they would FaceTime to keep in touch with Cassie's kids. Cassie said that she had not been contacted by Petito's family and that she didn't know if it was appropriate to reach out to them. Now, Petito, from Long Island, New York, was last heard from on August 25th when the couple had stopped in Grand Teton National Park before heading to Yellowstone. 6 days later, Landry returned to his parents' Northport, Florida residence in the van the two had been traveling in. Petito's mother reported her missing on September 11th. And this week, Landry was formally named a person of interest in the case days after he refused to speak to the detectives. And Cassie also wanted to make it known that even she has not been able to talk to him since the story made national news. Cassie said she's been cooperating with police and helping wherever she can and that she wishes she could talk to her brother. My guess is that Brian Landry's attorney has said, do not talk even to your family about this because anything you say can and will be used against you. Now, Cassie, Brian Landry's sister, said that she knows that her brother Brian has not reached out to her because his attorney has advised him so. That's right. When asked about what kind of person Brian is, Cassie said that Brian always does the right thing, and she noted how he cooperated with the police in the body cam footage and that he was always there for Gabby when she needed him. Now, a lot of people yesterday in the comments in regards to the video that we put up, so you can watch the video for yourself. A lot of people think that Brian Landry was being manipulative, locking her, Gabby, out of the van, that was in fact domestic abuse. But then you have Gabby admitting that she hit Brian Landry on the arm, which would be an assault. The police, police get a bad rap. Were they trying to do the right thing? Could they have arrested one or both of these individuals? Possibly. Would it maybe change the circumstances here today? Unlikely. If they had arrested both of them, they both would have got out more than like on a PR bond and been back together just like that. The police did what they could for a cooling off period. Who knows? you know, as defense attorneys, we always say we want the police to use and exercise common sense, that you don't always have to arrest everybody. I don't think the police did anything wrong in this particular situation. They made a judgment call, and I don't think you can say, but for that incident, Gabby would still be around today. But as you can see, this is why a lot of states have enacted statutes that when anyone, basically the police, respond to a domestic violence call, somebody is going to jail because they don't want a circumstance like this where they're being second-guessed. They'll let the court sort it out, charge everybody now, let the court sort it out. We'll wait and see. This is going to be another interesting case, ladies and gentlemen. All right, the Aurora Police Department. They're the police department involved in the death of Elijah McClain. Well, the Colorado Police Department, accused of killing Elijah McClain, apparently is being accused that they're racist and they targeted black people. Now, this is according to an investigation released Wednesday, and it alleges that McClain, a 23-year-old black man, died after cops in Aurora put him in a chokehold, and then paramedics injected him with ketamine back in August of 2019. The stop and detainment of McClain was in line with the Aurora Police Department's pattern of arresting and using force against black people. This was, as I said, a result of an investigation by the Colorado Attorney General's office. And they found that nearly 50% of the use of force incidents in Aurora were against black people, but only 15% of the city's population is black. According to the report, black people were twice as likely to be arrested compared to white people, and non-white people in general were 1.3 times more likely to be arrested than their white counterparts in the East Denver suburb. Now, three officers, Randy Rodema, Nathan Woodyard, and Jason Rosenblatt, approached Elijah McClain and stopped him for being suspicious. McClain tried to explain what he was doing, but the officers put him in a chokehold. And Aurora police officers Erica Marrero and Kyle Dietrich and Jaron Jones took a picture that reenacted the chokehold that the three officers used on Elijah McClain before his death. The Aurora Police Department later fired these three officers who mocked McClain's death in the chokehold photo that they sent to fellow cops. Rodema, Woodyard, and Rosenblatt, the officers who stopped McClain, were all charged on September 1 with manslaughter and negligent homicide. The two first responders, paramedic Jeremy Cooper and fire lieutenant Peter Chuinek, were also charged. McClain's family has also sued the city of Aurora and the police department, and they allege his death fit the larger custom policy and practice of racism and brutality in the department, referring to the Aurora Police Department. Now, let me just give you a little perspective from an attorney here in Colorado. Let me give you a quick story about the last trial that I just did. My clients gave me permission to do this, and it involved a case where he was pulled over. He was a young black man, and instead of being given a ticket, which the police officers said that they all they wanted to do was do that, but these were gang officers. Gang officers don't normally get involved in traffic enforcement matters unless, of course, they're using it as a pretext, i.e. a fake reason to pull somebody over and to search the car. Well, we filed a motion to suppress. The court denied it. I couldn't believe it. We went to a jury trial. Basically got to present the same evidence that was presented at the motion to suppress. And the jury, although not deciding that the arrest was legal or illegal, certainly was offended and found my client not guilty. Now, I'm not calling anyone a racist, but it certainly would appear as though my client was targeted by the Aurora Police Department. And I think my client would have a good faith basis for coming to that conclusion. I can also tell you, I don't think I've ever lost a trial out there. And you say, God, Scott, you must be a great attorney. Or I can probably hold my own. But the other thing was, everybody in Aurora hates the Aurora Police Department. Now, I'm making an exaggeration when I say everybody, but at least the people who showed up for jury duty were never that impressed with the Aurora Police Department. It was usually an overreaction, and the jury fixed it. I've always said, if you can find and present an injustice to a jury, they will correct it. and the Aurora Police Department has had a long history. Now, are there some very, very fine officers at the Aurora Police Department? Absolutely. I know some of them. But as I've said it before, all the good work goes out the door because of a few bad apples. And in this particular case, it seems like it's kind of a pattern of bad apples running the show out there. We'll see how the Elijah McClain case resolves. I think it's going to resolve with a big, fat check being paid to the Elijah McClain family as well as their attorneys. Why? Because Aurora wants to do it their way. We'll see. All right, next on the docket, let's do a quick recap of our contenders for the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week, and then we'll announce our contestant for the day. Then you all decide, vote in the comments below. Monday, police responded to a call about a woman acting erratically at the beach at the St. Augustine Beach in Florida, and Kalani Kroll was found in distress. She said she needed CPR and other treatment. Police escorted her to an ambulance, and Ms. Kroll began running around. Kroll then allegedly had opened the door of the unsecured fire engine and got into the driver's seat. The St. Johns County Fire Rescue personnel responded by pulling her out of the cab. That's right. So another person stealing first responders' equipment. Then we have Mr. Mark Filia, 41, arrested just last Saturday and charged in connection with a one-week exposure spree that began on August 31st and victimized workers at three separate toll plazas in Florida. He was arrested at his residence in St. Cloud and booked into jail on six felony exposures and sexual organ counts and one misdemeanor exposure. At least he wasn't stealing their equipment. He was just showing his. Texas attorney Mark Metzger was walking down the beach dressed as Mike Myers from Halloween, complete with a fake knife and fake blood. Metzger posted to his social media account that he was pranking Galveston after the hurricane. A few people wanted to take photos with him, but a few were not amused, called the police, and he was cited for disorderly conduct. Then Thursday, deputies found 33-year-old David Chambliss of Everett, Washington, driving a van and pulled him over at the Stinker Stores gas station off of Hit Road and 17th Street. Chambliss got out of the van, stood very close to the deputies, stating that he was God and that he didn't have to pay for any gas. Apparently, after running in circles in the parking lot, Chambliss stopped again for a moment and the deputies tased him. Apparently no effect because, well, maybe he was in fact God. Chambliss got back into his van, drove through the parking lot. Chambliss's van was eventually stopped and he was pulled out a large sword. Police attempted to tase him again, but once again, unaffected. Chambliss is charged with felony aggravated battery, attempt to elude law enforcement, misdemeanor resisting arrest, and misdemeanor driving under the influence. So obviously the police ultimately got him, and apparently he's still there because he's, well, not God. And today, a 43-year-old Costa Mesa man was arrested on suspicion of using a drone to airdrop illegal drugs into the outdoor recreational area of a local jail yard in the city of Orange. City of Orange is where my daughter went to college at Chapman University. And so along with numerous other crimes, he's been charged. The drone was found carrying heroin, methamphetamine, Xanax pills, and muscle relaxers. Obviously things you cannot go without in the detention center. A search for the suspect led investigators to the Costa Mesa residence of Che Cody Smart, where the police executed a search warrant, located multiple illegal firearms and undisclosed amounts of fentanyl, and a remote controller later determined to pair with the drone that was found in the jail. Wow. Mr. Smart, not so smart. One, you know they were going to be able to find the drone because, well, when you sign up for your drone, they track it. They can tell it where it goes. The controller's going to match up. Then you have drugs and guns, and drugs complicate everything on top of all the fentanyl. Man, Mr. Smart, you are not that smart. You are definitely a contender for the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week. Please vote below. We'll announce the winner on Monday. The winner will get cool Crime Talk gear. If you'd like to get some, hit the link below. All right, Thanks for watching. That's all we have for you today. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk. All right, recap. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It's Saturday. What does that mean? It is time for the Crime Talk recap with all of the top stories from throughout the week, all in one convenient location, right here, right now. Hope you enjoy it. We'll see you next time.